Mediocrity Podcast. Talk about that nerdy stuff. Movies, comics, and video games. It's all good and there ain't no fluff. Brian Kluger is hosting the show. Jeremy Miggert's got jokes. Jonathan Atterbury sounds really handsome, and we all sure love you folks.
Well, hello, folks. It is the Mediocrity Podcast, where the show is just okay. We're just okay. We're not great. We're not grand. We're just okay. We're not terrible. We're just okay. Mediocrity Podcast. I'm Brian Kluger. We have a great show for you today. We're going to talk about tons of things, video games, movies, Star Wars, and a few other things. And I am joined as always, by the awe-inspiring, stupendous, and mind-boggling duo of destiny, Jeremy Maggart and Jonathan Atterbury. How are you guys doing?
You forgot extremely handsome.
Oh, extremely beardedly handsome. We all three have beards and mustaches right now. It just seems like a trifecta of hairy beasts.
A trifecta of perfecta, one might say.
A trifecta.
One might say that.
One might say that. You guys doing well?
Oh, yeah. Doing great, man. How about you?
Doing all right. Doing well. I'm excited. I get to see... unfortunately, we're doing our podcast a day earlier today. Reasons unknown. I don't know. I think Jonathan has an Eyes Wide Shut party he didn't invite us to. But I am seeing Ready Player One today, so we'll have to talk about that the next time.
I'm going to see it this weekend, so we should be able to discuss at least the two of us. Are you going to go see it, Jeremy?
I didn't really have it planned, but yeah, I can probably squeeze it in, see if I can make it.
I think it's going to be right up your alley, because I know you haven't read the book, but man, is it a book that was written for people like us.
Cool.
Well, cool. I'm excited. We'll talk about it soon. First bit of thing, I believe last week we talked a little bit about what our last Star Wars scene we would want to see if they were to end all Star Wars movies forever. Well, it turns out George Lucas, in an interview very, 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 very recently, gave us his idea for the final end Star Wars movie to end all Star Wars movies. Do you guys want to hear that, or did you hear about it?
I haven't heard it yet. Tell me. Enlighten me.
Yeah.
George Lucas said in an interview that he always thought that the way to end Star Wars was that Luke was going to train his sister Leia with the ways of the Force completely. And the last thing would be him finishing the training and Luke dying with Leia carrying on the legacy.
Interesting.
Which is kind of interesting because in The Last Jedi, we kind of got a similar kind of vibe to that as Luke training Rey, type of thing. And
yeah.
Him dying. But what do you think about that? Is that something you'd want to see? I mean, of course, that's not going to happen at any time. But
I don't ever want to see Luke dying. I didn't want to see it in Last Jedi, and I don't ever want to see it.
Jeremy?
Yeah, seeing it once was enough. I'm good.
Too many times.
No, yeah. I mean, I know you want to. You see that. I mean, I know nobody wants to see Han or Luke die, but you know, if we didn't get the ending we had in Last Jedi, would that something you'd really want to see, like the last final scene, like Luke passing it all on to Leia?
I would only want to see that if it was a kind of much younger Luke and Leia.
Oh, really? Not like an older version, or
it's hard for me. It depends. Like, you know, if it was gonna, if Luke starts, let's say we're watching Last Jedi and Luke starts training Leia in this movie, you know, that's a bit much for me to believe that he starts training her in one movie and then the end of the movie, you know, he's like, here's all my shit.
Huh. You're the master now.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I think
at least for me, my ideal ending is everyone that all the characters I love are still alive.
Right. I mean,
that's the ending that I would like to see.
Yeah, we talked about that last week with everybody kind of there and happy, which I like. I like that aspect. But I guess before Lucas sold, Lucasfilm and Star Wars and everything else to Disney, he had
that was his vision.
Well, he had like a pretty general vague outline of the next trilogy, and that was part of it to end it.
Gotcha.
With. So,
yeah, because wasn't part of the deal that he wrote like a 3-movie treatment or something for them?
Yeah,
if they wanted.
Yes, I believe he did write. It wasn't like a full detailed script or anything. It was just it was like a general outline of all 3 movies. And of course, it's public knowledge that Disney said thank you, but no thanks. So there's that.
But who knows? They may have cherry picked some of the stuff from it. You know, maybe that's why Last Jedi does have that with the female protagonist and all that. Maybe they just were like, "Oh, we like some parts of this." You know, we're going to make Leia obviously force sensitive, and you know this and that. Maybe they did just borrow some things and then discard the stuff with Ewoks and Jar Jar Binks and stuff like that.
Right, right. Well, I mean, even in the prequels, Jar Jar Binks wasn't a big character except for the first movie. So,
and he was a large character in the first movie.
Yes, but after that, I doubt he would be in anything else other than like maybe like kind of like the similar to the
maybe it was Lucas's idea to have Jar Jar be Darth Plagueis, you know, to have him be Snoke. Maybe that was the idea.
We'll never know. We will never know. Speaking of Star Wars. I just have to say I reviewed recently on boomstickcomics.com, where you can find this podcast, Mediocrity, as well as on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, Lego Star Wars, The Freemaker Adventures. Have any of you guys seen this?
No.
No.
Okay, so from Disney, this is part of their Lego Star Wars movement called The Freemaker Adventures. There's only been 2 seasons. It doesn't look like they're going to be picked up for a third one. However, it was pretty decent. It kind of has a similar humor to like the Lego Batman movie and other Lego films, but it's geared more towards kids here. But the series takes place in between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi and centers on a family actually named the Freemakers. The focus is on their kids, which there's 3 of them. And they kind of, these kids basically make their way through the galaxy by salvaging parts from destroyed ships to make new ones. And they sell them after they're done, which is kind of how we met Rey in The Force Awakens, kind of. So I guess they come across a new lightsaber, which puts them kind of in between the Rebels and the Empire. And a lot of the, you know, original characters show up. Unfortunately, the only actor to voice their own character is Billy Dee Williams as Lando. But it might be worth it to see it if you're a big fan of Star Wars and everything Star Wars. But I doubt any of this will show up in any of the big movies. But I don't know if you guys like Lego Star Wars stuff or you just kind of stick to the main animated series and the movies. What do you think?
Not super into the Lego Star Wars.
No?
Most of the Lego stuff doesn't do it for me. I like some of the, like, I liked the Lego movie and the Lego Batman movie. Okay. But for the most part, I'm not that interested in it.
All right. What about you, Jeremy?
Yeah, I play the games. I don't really watch. The only Lego stuff I've watched are the things that you have given me, like that Lego Batman. And
okay. Cool, cool, cool. Yeah, it's an okay series. Like I said, if you're a huge fan of Star Wars, you'd probably get something out of it. I did think the title for the last episode of season 2, it was really funny. It was called Return of the Jedi. I just thought that was pretty funny. But, you know,
there's 2 seasons of this?
2 seasons of this.
Oh, wow.
And I guess they have not been renewed for a 3rd season, so who knows if this is going to be their last one, but they had 2 seasons of this Lego Star Wars, The Freemaker Adventures. So, but yes, you'll see Luke and everybody else, Jabba, you know, everything. Not Jabba. Jabba. Yes, Jabba.
So something you reminded me of when you talked about Billy Dee Williams, on my phone, it has a thing where it pops up Star Wars news daily. And apparently on this day in 1985, Billy Dee Williams got a star on the Walk of Fame, which kind of made me laugh because, like, just 2 weeks ago, Mark Hamill finally got his. And I'm like, how the fuck do you give Billy Dee Williams a star on the Walk of Fame before you give one to Mark Hamill?
It's usually about people, like, if they pay for it or not, though. The star in the Walk of Fame is very political, and it's very much like about donations made to the city.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's like the Oscars, very political, got to give stuff up. But, I mean, Billy Dee Williams' acting credit list is, you know, there's a lot on there. And, I mean, I don't know how they arrived
at Lando and other stuff.
And Harvey Dent one time,
and the malt liquor,
then
Colt 44.
Yeah, that's really weird how that happened. Like, it's just, you know, I guess we just all forgot about Mark Hamill, but until now, he deserved it. Yes.
So a little bit extra Star Wars news is there's some video game stuff going on.
It's just been
revealed that there is a open world Star Wars game in the works. Open world online Star Wars game in the works right now.
I read about that.
And I want to say I'm excited, except for it's an EA game, and that makes me just immediately not want to play it. But it is interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, an open world Star Wars game. I read about this, and yes, it is EA. And you think about that, and you're like, okay, that does sound cool. But then you realize, yes, EA. They're going to fuck this up completely. Yes, it might be really fun to kind of play for the first day, but it's not worth $60. Or
I don't know, man. It's so hard. I mean, because I do have to give credit where credit's due and say that EA was involved in the making of Dragon Age Inquisition, which is legitimately one of the only two games for Xbox One that I've been obsessed with.
Okay.
And that was a fantastic game, and they were, you know, of course, involved in that. It was them and BioWare. So I do have to admit that. And if they can put out a Star Wars game that's the same level of quality as Dragon Age Inquisition, I would be thrilled by that. But they could put out another Star Wars game that's the same level of quality as the last couple ones they put out.
Yeah, but this one hilariously is basically taking place of the game that they scrapped that Visceral was making.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they're going to be the same type of game or different. Or there's really not much.
The Visceral game was a linear storyline where you were basically playing through a story.
Right.
And because I think it was, I don't remember her name, but the person in charge of it, she wanted to do a linear story with like no microtransactions or anything else. And EA was like, nope.
We don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. In theory, on paper, yes. But in reality, exactly. It's a hard no.
It's a hard no. So even if it is great, you're still going to be like, nope, not doing it.
Even if
they're like Knights of the Old Republic Part 3, and it's going to be amazing, you're not going to play it.
But Knights of the Old Republic's not an open world game.
Well, the old ones weren't, but maybe this one would be.
I imagine it's...
I don't know. If you consider the generation for when those Knights of the Old Republic games were, those are pretty wide open.
That's true. That was open world.
Honestly consider those for being on the first Xbox. I would honestly consider those open world games.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and especially considering that the Old Republic game was completely like World of Warcraft, Star Wars.
Yeah.
So that's pretty damn open world and online. So they could be doing something like that, you know, somewhere kind of bridging the gap between the console system and that thing.
I feel like I'm usually an optimist. I'm not here. Like,
I'm not being optimistic. I'm saying what I hope will happen.
How do you guys feel about Respawn making a Star Wars game?
What's Respawn?
Respawn.
They make Titanfall.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. It could be good. I mean, Titanfall was all right. Both Titanfall games were okay.
I don't know. I've played like, you know, an hour of Titanfall 2, and it was fun. Star Wars World. I mean, well, yes, we all want a Star Wars open world game where we can like build lightsabers and, you know, play as the characters we love without having to jump through hoops. I just don't think it's going to happen, at least with EA, anytime soon.
Who knows? But it is within the realm of possibility that Disney said, look, you motherfuckers, you're going to put out a game that's going to be awesome and people are going to love it, or we're pulling the rights from you. And this might be their way to make up for that. It could happen. I'm just saying.
I would be amazed if it didn't happen, honestly.
It's not going to happen.
Wait, what's not going to happen?
Opinions.
You don't think Disney's going to be like, look, you're pissing everyone off with this shit?
No, I think EA has their heads so far up their ass, they're not going to make a good game. Even if Disney threatens to do so, because they're only concerned with one thing, money. And
did you play Dragon Age Inquisition?
I did not.
I'm telling you, it's probably one of the top three best games ever made for Xbox One, in my opinion.
Okay, all right.
It's a fantastic game, and everything about it is kick-ass.
You can trust John that if a Dragon Age game is good, he will say so. If a Dragon Age game is not good, he will say so.
It's true.
Well, curious.
He will be honest.
Curious about it. We'll wait and see what they release and what they come up with. I doubt it'll be great, but here's hoping. Here's hoping. Let's move.
Oh, the second piece of news is that there's new customization available for Battlefront 2. I haven't got on there. Yeah, I was just looking through my news feeds that I have with this stuff, and it was saying that there's a new patch that apparently just came out. And there's new customizations available. I haven't checked it out yet. We'll see.
Customizations like skins and weapons or just...
Probably. I'm thinking it's new skins for characters. The picture that went along with it was a Rodan rebel soldier, so...
Oh, yeah. Who cares? I want them to release an update of like, oh god, there are new original planets and not just an updated HD version. Or here you get Obi-Wan and General Grievous and Count Dooku. Well,
that stuff might be coming soon because what John was telling me, I was reading that the customization stuff wasn't supposed to hit until April.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm not.
It was like halfway through April or something like that.
Yeah, so I don't know if maybe they're just kind of trickling, like letting some stuff trickle down, or if this is actually like, hey, it's the full customization thing. I have yet to check it out. I will report back when I do.
Okay. All right. Let us know.
I'll check it out too.
Let us know. A bit of a movie news before we get hardcore into video game stuff. Movie news. We all like Jack Black, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, there's a new movie coming out with Jack Black, done by Eli Roth, who gave us, you know, movies like Cabin Fever and the recent remake of Death Wish. Jack Black and Kate Blanchett. The movie is called The House with a Clock in Its Walls, and it looks like, you know, old Spielberg / Guillermo del Toro type stuff with steampunk and comic book imagery.
You said it was Jack Black and Kate Blanchett?
Yep.
Interesting.
And basically
that sounds good but weird.
Yeah,
like it's such a bizarre combination.
Yeah, Eli Roth directs from a script from Eric Kripke, who's the creator of Supernatural. The log line for the movie is the magical adventure tells a spine-tingling tale of a 10-year-old boy named Lewis who goes to live with his uncle in a creaky old house with mysterious tick-tocking heart, but the new town sleepy facade jolts to life with a secret world of warlocks and witches that accidentally wakes the dead. So,
dude, I was into it until you said it was the guy that wrote Supernatural, and then I instantly did not give a shit.
How do you not like Supernatural?
Hey, this week there's a crossover between Supernatural and Scooby-Doo. God. It's animated. How do you not want that?
There's crossovers in Scooby-Doo and Batman.
So much. I really do.
So weird.
Why is it weird? That show is for preteen girls, dude. It is doo-doo.
is, dude. This is the same person who likes A Walk to Remember and fucking Hocus Pocus. Don't give me your shit.
I don't know. Like, those dudes are, like, in their 40s or whatever now, and that show's been on for, like, 15 years. I don't think the target demographic is 40-year-old dudes for teenage girls, for preteen girls.
So I disagree.
I've reviewed the last 2-3 seasons, and yeah, it's not an excellent show the likes of HBO, AMC, or FX, but it's still a decent show. Like, it's, they know who they are. They know exactly what type of show they're going for. It's funny,
I will say
ridiculous.
This. It is, isn't it on the CW? That's the channel it's on?
Yeah.
Okay. Point made. That's all. Anything on the CW is absolute crap made for teenage girls. The
end. Flash is pretty good.
Nope, it's not.
Christ.
I will admit, I've only seen like 3 episodes of The Flash, but I couldn't tolerate any more.
Oh, my God. So I'm just saying, the trailer for the movie actually looks pretty good. And it will remind you of like old Spielberg type stuff.
I love Jack Black and I love Kate Blanchett. That's, I mean, if you hadn't told me it was the guy from Supernatural, and if you hadn't mentioned the stuff about it being, you know, 10-year-old boy with witches and warlocks and stuff like that, I would have been on board. What? I was on board when you were like, it's a, you know, kind of a Spielberg-y movie with Kate Blanchett and Jack Black. That sounded great. And then the rest came out and it just sounded bad.
Well, take a look at the trailer. You might change your mind. The
movie. All right, I will. I'll watch the trailer.
The movie comes out September 21st, but because in addition, like Eli Roth to me, I don't think he's great. I really like Death Wish, what he did, but still I didn't like that. But I love Jack Black, of course, and I was like, okay.
Hey, Eli Roth's stuff is pretty hit or miss, yeah, and mostly miss.
I totally agree with that. And here, when I read the log line and just kind of reading about Forest Hill Trailer, I was like, okay, this sounds like it could be good, but it might sound like terrible. But I saw the trailer, I was like, hey, this actually looks pretty good. So here's hoping.
See, that's an example of a log line that was way too long. You read that log line, and the beginning of the log line, John was into it. The further you got into the log line, he was like, fuck this, I'm out. Log lines are supposed to be 2 sentences at max, and that's it.
All right.
He got into it, and then John's like, nope, fuck this.
He just doesn't have an attention span, I guess. All right. More movie news from the likes of Steven Spielberg. Amazon Studios has gone into business with Steven Spielberg and Javier Bardem, who played Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men. They are making a 4-hour miniseries available only on Amazon called Cortez, which will be based on, you know, Cortez, Hernan Cortez, who would be played by Javier Bardem. What?
I just like that description. It's a movie called Cortez about Cortez.
It will be based on Cortez, in case that this title lacked clarity.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could be like you never know, but yeah, it's the famous Cortez who led the expedition of Montezuma, Aztec Empire, type of thing. I'm in. Also, should it be known that the Schindler's List writer is writing the screenplay? So,
hey, that sounds like a winning combination.
I agree. I'm in.
I'm in. 4-hour miniseries, kind of like, you know, historical war type thing. I'm in, especially with Javier Bardem as a lead and Spielberg. Totally.
I'll watch it even if it's about a famous douchebag.
He's a complex man. What can I say?
Cortez? You mean the guy that decided to slaughter countless Native Americans and indigenous peoples?
Yes.
Yeah, that guy.
Well, it's interesting that Amazon got this because a few years ago, HBO was trying to do a Cortez series that was going to be done by Martin Scorsese and Benicio del Toro, but it never got off the ground, really. And I guess it from HBO, when HBO abandoned it, it was going to move to Stars, but nothing's happened yet. But now that Spielberg and Javier Bardem and Amazon's behind it, it looks like it's a done deal. So I'm in for this, even though John
says... Yeah, I mean, it's not what I say. It's the historical fact.
Were it's you like there?
Saying, even though Brian says Hitler killed a lot of Jews.
Too soon.
It both of these things happened. And I mean, that doesn't mean, of course, I'm not saying that I don't like movies about Hitler. They're still interesting. They still can be great movies like Schindler's List. Not that it was about Hitler, but it dealt with all of that. And this could be, maybe they're going to be painting it in actual, you know, proper historical light, because if it is the same guy that wrote Schindler's List, it could be something very similar to that with this genocide.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's cool.
I'm in. Cool. Another, a little bit of tech news now. Did y'all see that Apple introduced a new iPad for only $329 available mostly or geared towards students at high schools and colleges?
Yeah.
No?
I did not.
No, nor do I give a flying shit. Fuck Apple. That's what I'm hearing.
Wow, fuck Apple. Why?
Dude, come on. Evil conglomeration.
All right. Well,
I'm really I'm mad about one thing. And I'm mad about the fact that about a year ago, I bought a brand new MacBook and I love it and it was awesome. And then because it's the most delicate thing in the world, there was a tiny little thing in between my keyboard and the screen. And I closed it and it cracked the screen. And then I went to try to replace the screen, even though I have AppleCare. And they're like, yeah, that'll be $600.
What? AppleCare should have taken care of that.
They're like, nope, it's $600. And I'm like, well, just $600 to replace this actual screen? They're like, no, the way these new computers are designed is the screen is part of the action. It's like the whole thing. So you have to replace the whole thing, basically, to get the screen fixed. Well, like,
well, I guess besides,
you assholes.
I get it. I am definitely – Apple does a lot of terrible things. But I guess with this iPad, iPads are normally way more expensive than $329. And I guess this new iPad will feature like the Touch ID stuff and will support the Apple Pencil, which is the stylus pen you can get. However, of course, like John said, Apple sucks. Fuck Apple. They're not.
But do appreciate being on the Apple podcast app, by the way.
Yeah. The stylus pen will not be included with the iPad. You're going to have to buy it, which is $99 extra.
Oh, come on. Give me a fucking break, dude. That's so stupid for a fucking plastic thing, basically.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So the Apple
one. My Nintendo 3DS that cost $129 came with the stylus.
I don't think it's just a plastic stylus. Like, there's actually sensors and hardware inside it.
Well, it better be that good. It better actually have advanced technology.
Because I know that like with the Wacom Cintiqs, there's different pens you can use on them, and switching between the model, like when you go to like a nicer like Wacom pen, there is a world of difference in like how it handles, even going into Photoshop. And there are a lot of people that actually are hoping to be able to use wish they could use the Apple Pencil like on their Cintiqs. Because apparently it's even better than what the Cintiq pens are.
Well, I hope that's what it's going to be.
But I do think in a case like where they're going to make a $330 iPad for that, what they should do is instead of including an Apple Pencil, just give it a free cheap stylus. And then
if it's for students, why do you want to bone them?
No, exactly. I totally agree with that.
They want to bone everybody. That's the whole point. Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know, man. It just seems like I don't understand the lure of iPads for the most part, because it's really just a bigger version of this. If you've got an iPhone, why do you need an iPhone and an iPad?
iPad is the iPhone without the phone.
Yeah, so it's a less useful piece of technology, just a little bit bigger.
Right.
I don't get it. I really don't.
So in addition to this Apple iPad, Apple announced that they're introducing a new software called Schoolwork, which can be used for digital classroom assignments. And essentially, it would allow teachers to assign homework and tasks across multiple apps for their students. Mm. Do you think that's interesting or?
Well, being that I'm not a student, not really.
All right. No,
I mean, who knows? Maybe it'll be awesome. Maybe it'll help people learn and teach. That's cool.
No, yeah, I'm there with you in the way that I'm glad that they're doing a cheaper version. But again, it just still seems like it could be so much more for a lot less money.
On this episode, Jonathan hates everything. Yeah. You can just put that. You can put that on the fucking title.
Jonathan episode, hates
episode,
everything.
Whatever this is. Jonathan
that's,
hates
that's
everything.
That's not true. I'm about to discuss a whole lot of things that I love.
Yeah,
a
of course,
a bunch of them. We're about to discuss something that Brian hates that we love.
I was trying to get a rise out of you, but we'll get to that soon. We have a couple other things. Okay, that came out in news today. Moving on. There's a thing called MoviePass where you can buy a monthly subscription to MoviePass, and it allows you one movie in the theaters per day for like literally $7 a month only. Now, I guess Landmark Theaters across the country, which is owned by Mark Cuban, has said that Landmark is involved with the MoviePass. Like, you will be able to do Landmark Theaters as well. Do you like this setup? Do you like being able to pay $7 a month to see one movie a day in the theaters? Do you think that should go away?
Well, as a consumer, it sounds amazing. Who wouldn't say that sounds amazing as a consumer when you're looking at how much you normally pay ripped off at the movie theaters? But I'm a little afraid of the long-reaching impact it might have on the business. You know, it's like when Redbox came out or Netflix came out, we were all like, this is so cool. But then next thing you know, all the brick and mortar video stores disappeared. And that was something that I loved and that's something I still do wish was around. So it makes me kind of concerned about whether or not that will impact it in the same way those things that seem so cool impacted their businesses.
Yeah, I mean, look, same thing with like the music industry with all the subscription services and everything being online.
Yeah, it affects stuff big time. You know, if that's going to be the new way, theaters could really soon just, or movie companies could really just soon change their format to make it so they can still take advantage of this.
I'm honestly surprised if there was going to be a subscription service. I'm kind of surprised the theaters don't do it already themselves, like Cinemark having one and AMC having one, like everybody having their own. That to me makes more sense than this.
So I think Cinemark or AMC actually does have one, but it's not a good deal. It's like, I think like $20 a month and you get two movie tickets or something like that. You're like,
crazy.
What? It's not even in remotely the same ballpark as like this MoviePass thing.
Yeah. So when MoviePass started out like 6 years ago, they started selling the MoviePass for $40 a month. Then they raised it to $50 a month. But only like less than a year ago, they brought it down to $9.95, which basically bumped their subscriber base from 20,000 people to more than 2 million. And now, even like this past week, they lowered it a dollar to $6.95 per month. So, and that's one ticket per day.
Isn't that a $3 lower?
No, well, so it was $9.95 8 months ago, but they've been lowering the price.
They've been progressively lowering it.
So they're trying to get everybody there, but now more theaters are going to it. Because, I mean, if you just normally buy a ticket on a Friday night for the big movie, you're normally going to pay, like, depending on where you are, maybe $15-$20 bucks per ticket. And that's just for your ticket. So the incentive of being $7 a month now, and that's one movie per day, and nobody's going to go see a movie per day, maybe four movies a month. That's already paid for. That's, you know, so I wonder where it ends or like how theaters make money and the movies make money to this. Like, it's just all weird to me.
Yeah, it sounds, you know, just like I remember when Netflix came out, I was like, wow, this is too good to be true. It's, you know, $9 a month and you can rent unlimited movies basically throughout the month. Instead of going to Blockbuster, where it's $5 per movie for a day or two.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is so cool, until it destroyed the very thing that I loved going to do on the weekends, which was renting movies from brick and mortar stores.
Correctamundo. Yeah, I'm we'll see. I never had a movie pass. I've never had a movie pass. I guess I don't need to right now, but I guess if I didn't do what I did for a living, I would seriously consider and most likely buy that just because it's just like, oh shit, I love movies. $7 a month, you know, that just makes sense to me. So I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like I said, as a consumer, it sounds like unreal good. That sounds so cool.
All right. A couple bit of quick news before we get to our video games and two big topics today. This might piss you off, and I'm very curious because this has a lot of EA vibes in it. So Time Warner, you know, the cable company, they have announced they are going to release their own live streaming service for sports called I'm trying to remember what it's called. It's like it's BR Live is what they're calling it. Or Turner Live or something like that. But it's sports stuff. So basically what they said is this is going to be a subscription-based service for games. And it will be for NBA, hockey, and baseball. But they
wait, like games as in like watching games on TV?
Correct.
Watching sports games?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Watching games on TV. And they went as far as to say is that I guess they are going to have it as like a monthly subscription, but there's going to be different subscription services where you can actually watch just one game and pay for that. Or going even more into it, let's say somebody cannot watch an hour of the game. This program will let you buy perhaps 5 or 10 minutes of a game for like 99 cents, which is kind of like a microtransaction. So what do you think about this?
I think that this is the wrong target audience.
No.
We are not members of the people that care about this.
No, well, okay, so let's – okay. I know that we don't talk about sports a lot, but it is like a big deal. And if this goes through, this could affect like movies and other things because it has like that microtransaction EA type of mode where like, okay – if you want to watch, you know, 10 minutes of a game, pay a dollar.
Well, I don't know. I think that it's sports, not that I really watch them, but I think that it's very different than a movie. You know, like if you're watching a movie, you pretty much probably don't just want to see a scene from the movie. Whereas a sports game, you know, you might just want to see the winning play.
Well, I mean,
and so maybe, yeah, you want to pay for these 15 minutes where, you know, this person hit this home run and that's all you want to watch.
Well, I mean, I like watching sports, especially, and I know Jeremy loves watching baseball. I do too. It's one of my favorite things to watch. And of course, I love watching NCAA college basketball. I just don't know if, like, you know, you can have this as an app and let's say you pay $5 a month for, you know, the game you want, or if you would pay a dollar to see like 20 minutes of the Ranger game that you missed. I don't know. Jeremy, what do you think?
Well, I feel like it's not really as much to pay a dollar to see the 20 minutes you missed. And I could see it working like, oh, I missed the first hour of the game because I wasn't home. Now I'm home and I want to watch the rest of the game, and to where you're buying it basically. I mean, you could say it's a microtransaction, but at a prorated amount. To where it's like, okay, I missed the first whatever half of the game. I don't want to pay full price for the game. You know, I'm just going to start watching it here. You know, to me that makes sense from, you know, from a sports, you know, standpoint.
Okay, yeah, I'm curious about this because because ESPN is launching their own sports streaming subscription service at the end of the month. So I'm just, you know, for somebody who, you know, cut the cord and cable, I still like watching like college basketball or, you know, Rangers games or whatever. And so something like this I'm really interested in because I think a lot of us who still like Star Wars still like to watch certain games or whatnot, or into sports at least to some degree. But
well, I think it, you know, it kind of comes down to that same thing we were talking about where, you know, well, they're having the Disney streaming service come out. And how do we feel about having all these different streaming services? And I think it's ultimately like, well, the more options as a consumer, then the better. That's kind of good. That way you can pick and choose. If you want to pay $10 a month to be able to watch these games, then you get to do that. That's cool.
No, I agree with
you. Yeah, see, to me, it's weird because, I mean, like, all of those professional sports leagues already have their own networks and everything else. You know, like, you can subscribe to the MLB network just for Ranger games and watch all the Ranger games already.
Yeah, but that might be, like, what, you know, $60 a year or something for the season, whereas here you might, let's say it's, like, $8 a month or $5 a month and you get every game or something like that. Or I have no idea how they're going to do it because they haven't been detailed, but this is what their plan is to do. So I wonder if this actually works and they do this, whatever thing they're shilling will transfer over to, let's say, Netflix, Hulu, or any other streaming service. Always curious about that.
Yeah, who knows?
All right. A last bit of news, since we're talking about sports a little bit. Like last year, HBO's Game of Thrones has once again been paired up and teamed up with the MLB throughout the current upcoming MLB season at 18 different baseball parks. Professionally wise, there will be Game of Thrones themed nights throughout the entire season where you can buy Game of Thrones type of merchandise and food and stuff like that, which I'm very excited. That gets other people out to the ball game, I guess, or vice versa. I'm excited about this. I didn't go to one last year, but I'm very excited because Rangers is one of the ones on the list. So I'm going to try to find a Game of Thrones night to go to at the Rangers and see if I can, like, supposedly you can buy, like, Game of Thrones / baseball player bobbleheads and t-shirts and types of different food from Game of Thrones and stuff like that. So I'm kind of, I'm interested in this.
White Walker nuggets.
They did it with Star Wars.
Oh, they did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm in. I think that's a great idea. That's kind of crossing two genres right there. I'm in. So what, John, you just have no desire?
I'm not a sports fan, really. I watch one sports game a year and it's the Super Bowl.
So
that's pretty much it.
To reiterate Jeremy's conclusion, this is the John hates everything podcast.
I didn't say I hate sports. I just said they don't. I totally appreciate what it is and that people love it. It's just not something that I particularly am interested in.
Again, John hates everything.
Oh God.
Oh God. I blame you. All right. Moving on. Okay. So last week we talked a little bit about this video game that just came out, called Sea of Thieves, and we've played it for quite a while now, for over a week. For many hours, and we're here to, like, talk more about it. And earlier in the show, John said, like, something Brian hates, but I don't hate it. I texted Jeremy and John earlier in the week saying, like, I just fucking hate this game, just to get a rise out of John, just because he's really passionate about this new Sea of Thieves game. I think it might be, like, his holy grail right now. Curious, guys, how does this game hold up after a week?
The more I play it, the more I love it.
Me too.
It's simply that way.
I'll admit it. I thought this game looked stupid, but it's fantastic.
It's just so good to be right. I knew this game was going to be amazing.
You don't know it yet. You've only been playing for a week.
It's amazing. I would know it if I.
Okay, we have played it a shitload.
Yeah.
We would know by now if it wasn't amazing. Trust me.
So I've played this game, Sea of Thieves. I got it. You know, it's a free trial and everything. And we had, like, you know, John lost his mind last episode on Mediocrity where I was, like, trying to figure out if I was going to get the free version or not. But I do like it a lot. It's really fun. I'm very scared that it's going to get really old really quickly. But I'm enjoying it so far. I like playing with you guys. I've finally gotten to, you know, read the map and drive the ship, steer the ship and do the sails and, you know, all sorts of things. Kill sharks and other skeletons and stuff like that. Seek treasure, read the compass. It's pretty fun. I mean, there's a couple things I would like to see, but what about you? I mean, you guys have probably played this more than 24 hours so far. what's the best part of the game so far? Like the top three best parts of the game.
Fighting other pirates, and stealing their treasure.
So I got to say, the last couple times I've played, at least, and it's been more than like 10 minutes. It's been like a couple hours each time. We haven't like really found another pirate. Like, it's really rare to come across another pirate ship.
Well, you know, I have noticed that there seems to be some major differences in the server, the servers that you get onto, because sometimes you'll get in a game and there will be everywhere you look, there's a ship. Okay. And other times you'll get on, you'll play for 2 hours and there won't be anybody. I think they're still figuring out, because I think that when they first launched the game, the big problem they had was that the servers couldn't handle how many people were playing. So I think what happened, this is just a guess, but I think what happened is they exploded their amount of servers that they had, and now they're still kind of in the middle of trying to figure out how many servers there need to be active at one moment to handle the load, so it's not too few people or too many people or what. Because they said that ultimately their goal with the servers is to have it so you can encounter another crew of actual people every 15 minutes or so.
Okay.
So I think that that's what they're going for. I think they're, you know, the game's like just barely a week old now, right? I think that they're just still in the process of balancing it all and figuring that stuff out.
Which is interesting, because I guess it all started with, what, PS3 maybe? That, you know, people would release games, you know, you would say finished, but it seems like they're always tweaking new games nowadays. Every new game that comes out, they're tweaking, they're adding stuff.
Unless it's Battlefront 2, in which case they don't tweak it for a month at a time.
And I don't know. I mean, like I said, I enjoy the game. It's fun and it has a lot of possibilities. I'm really scared of the No Man's Sky type thing, but I haven't reached that yet.
Dude, I hate that comparison. It's such a silly comparison, because No Man's Sky is single player. You can't. It's apples and oranges, because they've said this game is a multiplayer game. That's what it's designed for. It's designed for you to get in there and have fun with your friends. And so the people that aren't doing that, the people that are just getting in there by themselves, of course they're saying it's just like No Man's Sky. But that's because they're completely misusing the game, basically.
And I will say, playing this game, I have literally only played with other people, like at least two other or three other people. I don't understand how you could actually play the game with just yourself. Like, steering that boat takes at least three people.
No, okay, so we've done it in the big ship. There is a small ship that you can get into, the sloop. You can either be in the galleon, which is for three or four people, or the sloop, which is for one or two people. And I've done it solo, probably for 3 or 4 hours worth of time at this point. And it's totally doable.
Okay.
It's just, it's challenging. You have to make sure you're working all the stuff, but it's doable. It's just not as fun. The magic happens when you play with other people.
Absolutely.
No, I've enjoyed playing with all of you guys, like, you know, communicating and like, oh, do the sails, do this way. Oh, do you see this? Like, it's like really fun to do that.
It is.
But I'm curious. I mean, like I said, it's fun right now, but let's say in a month time, it's only been a week, like you said. What in a month time is it going to get? I mean, you're going to be doing the same thing if they haven't released anything.
If they have, yeah, that is absolutely what the success of this game hinges upon. But from everything that I've read from the producer and the people that are running this game, they have all the intentions in the world of dumping a crap ton of new content into this game regularly. They're saying that right now they're pretty much set up so they can release new stuff almost daily. Okay. And their goal will be to get there. And they said they're not going to do like seasons or big game releases or, you know, big DLC things. It's more like they're just going to be like, here's this new thing one day. 2 days later, here's this new thing. A week later, you get this new thing and things like that. They're going to be just trickling new stuff into it all the time, which sounds perfect.
Okay.
You know, and I feel like there's even clues that you can find in the game of stuff that could be coming. I mean, there are, you go to the islands and there's little, you know, hieroglyphs of Kraken tentacles, and we got to fight the Kraken the other day, and that was fucking awesome. I've seen hieroglyphs of something that looks like, you know, people fighting a giant crab. So I mean, we could be getting more, you know, kind of bigger sea monster style things, which is awesome.
No, I'm into that.
And they've said that they're already planning on putting in new voyage sources. So you've got the three different orders right now, the order, you know, yada, 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 the different quest types, but they're also going to be soon doing like a fishing quest type. So you can be doing those as well. And it sounds like they're going to be, one of the things that I really like is that they have the ability to change the weather or the change the waves or the water level, or all these things can just be changed by them pulling some switches, basically. And I like that. And they said that they have all the intention of doing that. You know, I've mentioned to you guys, but they plan on doing something akin to Shark Sundays, where there's like just five times more sharks in the water that day. Oh. Or they might have some days of the week where the wave, it's like just the sea is going nuts, or there's just a huge storm that encompasses the entire map all day. And that just, I love that. It makes it, doing that kind of stuff is going to be what keeps this game alive. And adding in more customization things and all of that stuff. It's going to be, if they do that, it can be perfect.
The raid was so much fun.
Yeah, I haven't done a raid
yet.
Yeah,
the Skull Fort.
Yeah, I haven't done that yet.
The Skull Fort was great.
I want to do that.
Skull Fort. So for anyone who's tried the game, that's what we're talking about, is off in the distance you might see in the cloud the skull with the glowing green eyes. And that indicates a fort that you have to try to take on, or you can try to take on, that has basically the greatest loot. And if you go over there, it's really hard. You have to kill a bunch of NPC skeletons, and you might well encounter other pirates. But if you can do all of those things and finish it, you can get access to a room just bursting at the seams with great loot.
Yep.
Well, I haven't done that yet, and I really want to.
Brian, have you had a real naval battle yet in this game? Like where you encountered another pirate ship and had to take them on?
Oh, yeah, for sure. A couple times.
Okay, I couldn't remember if you've done that or not yet.
Oh, yeah, a couple times, and it's super fun. I loved it.
So, dude, that is what, to me, there's nothing, I can't remember the last time I did something in a video game that is as much fun as encountering another crew of actual players on their pirate ship, taking them on, sinking their ship, and taking all of their treasure and then selling it. That is the most satisfying thing that I've done on Xbox One, probably, period.
Remember, you and I did that, and when we sailed off, we waved at the pirates.
That's right. We waved at them afterwards.
Yeah, and really, the awesome thing about this is the first game that I've played, and I don't even know how long, where there are things that I have done in the game that I wish I had recorded so I could watch them later. Like, for example, when we were pulling into that island and we were going way too fast, and Brian at the last second had us drop the anchor, and we Ace Ventura'd the parking spot there next to the dock.
Like a glove.
I wish I had recorded that.
Yeah.
I wish I had recorded it when I blew up that dude in the water with the cannonball.
Oh, that was...
Yes,
wish I had... There are so many things like that where I'm just like, fuck. I wish I had videos of this, just like I have the old videos of us playing Halo 3. I was like, I wish I had those videos.
Well, dude, that's what I love about this game is I think the last time I played a game like was when I played Skyrim, and meaning that like a game where you actually want to tell your friends stories about things you did in the game. Like when we play a game, I can later on talk to somebody else that wasn't playing that game who in that round who does play the game, and I can be like, you know what I did? I did this and this and this, and it was so much fun, and this is what I found, and I can tell them this details, and they're like, that's awesome! I can't remember doing that with anything since Skyrim was brand new.
And interestingly enough, I believe Atterbury, his character got struck by lightning out of nowhere the other day in the game.
Didn't even know it could happen. I'm standing on the freaking bow of the ship, and I get struck by damn lightning.
That's so funny. And then, I'm curious because there are sharks and fish, and you can stand literally like on the tip of the boat or somewhere. I would like it like if sharks jumped up and tried to eat you. And another thing I would like, when we're on an island, we've said this before, that you can only see your other teammates in eye view. So like if they hide behind a rock or anything, you're not going to be able to find them because their name doesn't pop up. I would actually like them to have their names pop up. I know.
See, I don't want that. I do not want that.
Because I know, yes, you have to say like, yes, I'm by the rock on the southeast island. You have to get your compass out. It's a lot of work.
One of the things that I love about this game is the lack of hand-holding.
Oh, so much.
That because what it does is not having the names pop up and not having an indicator showing you what direction your ship is in, what that does is it forces you to do two things. Number one, pay attention to where you're going. And keep an eye on, make sure you know, if I'm heading this direction, my ship is behind me, so that's the way I need to go if I need to get there in a hurry.
Yeah.
You actually need to think about that. And B, it makes, or number two, it actually makes you think and have to communicate with your teammates to say, all right, well, you're fighting skeletons, where are you? And the teammate will have to go, I'm on the western shore, you know, or I'm on the western tip of the mountain, something along those lines. It makes you communicate.
I agree.
And I love that.
And I love that there's no radar on this game.
Yeah, that would so take away from it in a huge way.
There's so many games where it's like I'm playing them, and it's like I'm constantly looking at the radar, and I'm as much looking at the radar as I am everything else. And really, that takes me out of the game. That's one of the things I've realized about this game is I don't have a radar taking me out of the moment of playing this game.
And you don't have any menus or things like that, or things that are going to pull you out of the actual game. Pretty much every single thing that you do in that game keeps you in the game experience.
Yeah, like you are playing the game the whole time.
Yeah, there's no health meter. Well, I guess there is a health meter just at the lower, but it's so discreet that you hardly even notice it. But as far as the directions and adjusting everything, you have to just manually figure it out.
I love it.
It's a fun game.
There's no skill tree that you're pulling up. Everything is great.
One of the other really fun things to do in the game is that there's like an alcohol barrel on the ship, and if you drink too much of it, you will get drunk and like it'll be hard to walk for you, but then you can like puke. And you can puke on other people, or you can get your bucket and puke into the bucket and then throw it on your teammates, which will then cause them to puke themselves.
That's the other thing I wish I had recorded.
A ton of little things like that that are just hilarious. And I also learned that if you play your instrument while you're drunk, it goes all atonal and crazy.
We learned that the other night.
Lots of little touches like that. You're like, oh, I'm so glad that they thought about that.
We had a really fun time the other night where I laughed. I was like guffawing laughing so hard. Is when we put our teammate Ebola, we voted him into the brig. You can vote somebody into the brig and they can be in jail. So we started throwing puke on him in jail. And then I think Atterbury got the idea to get one of the gun barrels, which you can explode like dynamite. Put it right down there. So he didn't want to just put one down there. You want to put a few. Atterbury was so happy over the mic. He ran down there only for Ebola to kill him with
the gun barrel. Well, it's because Ebola, our friend Matt, he actually just hit the, or shot the gunpowder barrel and exploded me.
Yeah.
And all of us. And really, the gunpowder barrel's maybe one of my favorite things in the game. I am so excited by that function. It's so much fun.
It was so funny. Yeah, I agree. I'm having a good time playing the game. I'm just really worried that it's going to get old. But
I don't know why you're worried about that. It could happen. But from every bit of news that they've given us, every bit of press release, all of that stuff, it doesn't sound like that's what's going to happen. Unless you're being a negative Nancy, in which case
you should
be worried about it.
Not worry about it. Until it does happen.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to be playing the game.
You need to play more with John and I.
Okay. If it was EA, you'd have a reason to be worried.
That is where the magic happens on that game.
Yeah. I guess the only other thing I don't like about, if I could change one thing right now, I would have it that you could have more than four people on a ship in a party.
I would do that too.
That I agree with. Now, I'm hoping that that's one of the things that they will add to in the future. I'm hoping that they'll change the way you can add to your crew and start a crew. What I would rather see is instead of having to do it outside the game, you can go to the bar and actually recruit new people or have people meet you there and join your crew.
That'd be cool.
And you could have larger, that way you don't have to be like, all right, let's start a new game. Let's leave this one, start a new game so Brian can play with us.
Right.
You know, that's kind of a pain in the butt, and that kind of takes away from the experience a little bit. So I would rather see that, and I would like to see the option to have bigger crews. Or what I was telling Jeremy is I would really like to see the option of having multiple ships and multiple crews have the option to work together. So you could almost have a fleet going.
Well, that's what I would like. You can. I want a guild fleet set up.
Yeah. Yes. Like cool. Because the problem is like it. Let's say Jeremy and I were on a ship and a crew, and Brian, you and Matt were on a separate ship and a crew. There's no way doing that we could even make sure that we're on the same server.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't be able to share voyages and stuff like that. So if there's some option where we could link up, all get in the same server and all share benefits from completing voyages, that would be amazing.
That would be super cool. I'm in. Sea of Thieves. You can get it for free right now on Xbox Game Pass. If you sign up for the 14-day free trial, other than that, it's $60. But it seems like it's worth your $60.
Yeah, if they didn't have this for Game Pass, I would gladly pay $60 to buy it. And seriously, this is one of the most unique games that I've played in a long time. It's amazing. I absolutely love this game.
Good deal.
I will likely end up buying it. Just because for Josie and I to play it on Game Pass, it's $10 a month each because it doesn't work to just do one Game Pass.
Yeah, it does. That's what I do.
Oh, really?
That's what I've been doing the whole time. I haven't done it at all.
Oh, so Lauren didn't have to sign up for Game Pass?
Nope.
Okay. Well, shit.
Changed his mind.
Yeah. That changes everything, doesn't it?
I ain't buying shit.
There you go. All right. See if Thieves do it. Let's get on to our two big major topics of the week. I believe Atterbury has a very similar topic in the video game realm.
Because we were talking about Sea of Thieves and how unique it is, how it's different than really anything we've played so far. And that made me think that I'd like to talk about other video games that we've played in the past that made us feel the same way. Games were like, wow, this is unlike anything I've ever experienced before. And so I'd like to talk to you guys and see what you feel were games that did that for you.
Sweet.
Brian, why don't you start us off?
Okay. I have a list, as I always do. So I guess I'm going to go back to the original Nintendo, the Power Pad, with their games. That was like unlike anything. You just had like a controller. But now with a Power Pad, you actually got to be, you know, got to run and jump and all that stuff with like the track and field and everything. I really loved it. The virtual reality Super Nintendo game that came out for tennis where you put the headset on, that was like next level. Even though it was like a lot of red lines, that was super cool. That was a game that really stuck out. I played that tennis game. Awesome. When the Wii came out, Wii Bowling and Wii Mario Kart. The Wii Bowling, when you got to take that little controller and actually do the motions.
Yes.
As well.
I agree so much.
Yeah.
The Wii Sports, the tennis and the bowling, all of that was so different. It was so cool.
Super cool. And as well as Wii Mario Kart, where you can put your controller in an actual like steering wheel and do that. Super fun. Also, the trivia game 1 vs. 100 on Xbox 360, which only lasted like a year, unfortunately, where if you sign in into this 1 vs. 100 game, you would actually be randomly picked to actually go live, win money, answer questions. People can vote on you. You can see other people's avatars. It was just a really cool way to like interact with other gamers. Rock Band and Guitar Hero. I just love playing the instruments in Guitar Hero. And then Call of Duty Modern Warfare, specifically when your character, you're the good guy, you had to go undercover as a terrorist and actually shoot up an airport and kill innocent civilians. Because if you didn't, the terrorists would figure you out. It was hardcore. Never seen anything like that in a game. And then, of course, Eternal Darkness, my favorite game ever for the Nintendo GameCube. Horror game. It messed with you. Like, it had your health meter and magic meter, but it also had a sanity meter. And if your sanity went down, the game would turn on and off. It would tell you it was deleting the game. The volume would go up and down. Your character would like develop a giant head and then explode. Spiders would crawl on the screen. It was like really cool, and I wish they would still make shit like that. So those are my games that have always stuck out with me, that like always like, wow, that was like a unique experience, much like Sea of Thieves in the fact that, yeah, there's no radar. There's no, like, you have to do everything yourself. It's not handheld or holding your hand throughout. So, yeah, those are my games.
Those are good choices. How about you, Jeremy? What have you got?
All right. So, first one is my brother Chris and I used to play, I think it was like an RBI baseball back in the days of like Sega Genesis or Sega or something like that. And it was super fun. We played a bunch. It was even way back in the day before video games got the license from like, you know, actual like actually from baseball. So like all the players were made up. So it's not like it's not like if you were the Rangers, you were playing as any of the Rangers whatsoever. So, but it was just something we played a shitload of, had a ton of fun. Also, I'm going to put Twisted Metal on the list from back in the day, just because that was an absolutely phenomenal time of just playing with everybody and blowing shit up.
Yeah, and it was so different because I mean, I remember when I first played like Twisted Metal and that type of game, we were just like, what? I can't, like, I get to blow up my friends in their cars. Mm-hmm. That was unlike anything that had happened at that time.
Super fun.
So I got the old Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle 4-player arcade game.
Oh yeah.
Those were super fun, you know, back in the days of, you know, of the arcade, to just go and play a game like that where you just got to play with all of your friends at the same time. And that was a really badass thing to get to do. I have Star Wars Battlefront on here, but it's really just from the days of, you know, when we used to play, I forget if it was one or two, where we'd both sit and play on, John and I would sit and play on the same console. And I would even put the current Star Wars Battlefront 2 on that list from when it first came out, less now, because clearly we are not having as much fun as we were.
And what about those games was different? What about those games was unique for you?
That's the first time you really got to have fun and experience Star Wars with someone else. You know, everything else you did, whether it was Dark Forces, Jedi Academy, you got to explore Star Wars, even the same thing for Knights of the Old Republic, but you were still exploring by yourself.
Yeah, the exploring was by yourself. I mean, like, you could play, like, X-Wing and stuff like that, and Jedi Knight and or Jedi Outcast and some of those games multiplayer. Mm-hmm. But it was like when you'd play Academy multiplayer, you were in a little room. It wasn't really exploring.
You were just, like, in a part of the temple.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to throw Halo 3 on there, because that was some of the best fun I've ever had playing games.
What about Halo 3 was unique for you? Like something you hadn't experienced yet?
I still have got to say that was the first time I'd played a shitload of multiplayer with my friends. Where it was the first time I'd ever had like a gaming community where just a bunch of dudes we were playing every single day. And awesome. we had a lot of fucking people playing in that group.
Yeah.
Yeah, building those maps with all the, you know.
That's true. That was unique, is having the ability to build those maps. I had not ever experienced that before. Where we're like, hey, let's just make our own map that's completely insane.
And not only build your own map, but you can like configure like how often the like grenades spawned and like how fast or how high your character can jump. It was super fun.
It made me so sad that Halo 5, when they did the Forge, did not set up a way to change point values for kills.
Yeah.
That was the end of our Halo multiplaying right there.
And plus, they made the Forge, like building your own map, super difficult, whereas in Halo 3, it was just kind of like easier to do. But in Halo 5, it's like, wow, there's a lot that goes into this.
Well, I actually disagree. It was way easier in Halo 5.
Real? Oh, man, I don't agree.
There were things that once you learned it, it was so much faster and so much simpler. Like, to get things to line up and click into place, Halo 5 had stuff built into it that it just did that for you. It wasn't like where you're like, all right, I have to guide this in. Oh, fuck, it tilted a little bit, and so now my map is fucked up. You know?
Yeah, that was fun. No, Halo 3, because there's so many games out now, like Sea of Thieves and Call of Duty and all that other shit. It's kind of like, don't we all want to get back on Halo 3 for at least like once a week? I don't know how it would hold up, but still fun, though. Still fun.
For me, the Destiny rating for Destiny 1, because that was the first time I'd ever really played something that was objective-based with a large group, to where you were all trying to accomplish an end goal. It wasn't like, oh, we're just going to get in here and fight. That was a unique experience to like get in there and have everybody have to work together to accomplish the same goal. And even to the point where it's like, all right, everybody has different jobs at different times.
Yeah, that was very cool. Definitely.
I dug that. And I think the last thing I want to mention is the Revenge of the Sith video game with that extra fight mode that we had. Because holy shit, we played the crap out of that game.
Interesting. We did. And so what about that was unique for you?
Man, that was just fun because you had all these extra characters that weren't in the movies. And you could tell that, like, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a main part of the game. It was kind of an afterthought, but it was an afterthought that they put a kind of a shitload of work into.
Right. And it you know, of course, there are other fighting games that have been around, but it didn't really feel like anything like Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter or anything like that. It had such a different vibe about it, where it still played like the single player campaign, except you were actually just being able to control the other character.
And every player was completely different, you know, regardless of who you played as.
That was very cool. I did have a lot of fun with that.
So good.
Brian, look, you're getting nostalgic over there.
I am.
It's getting all weepy.
I am.
Hey, but you know what the great news is? The great news is that we're talking about all these games, and I don't hesitate for one moment to put Sea of Thieves right amongst them.
I agree.
So far, yes.
It has been so long, and we were all starting to get a little pessimistic about the current state of video games, and here comes Sea of Thieves just to inject us with a whole bunch of new excitement and hope, and it's easily going to be in my top 10 favorite video games of all time.
Wow, I don't know about that yet. We'll see.
All right, my games that blew my mind and were totally unique experiences for me when I played them, I want to start with a game called Jammer Lammy. Have any of you guys played this game?
Nope.
I've heard of it.
It is. So have you guys played Parappa the Rappa?
Yes.
No.
All right, Parappa the Rappa. It was the same. I think it was the same company that made a game called Jammer Lammy, which is the same style, same format, except you were playing guitar instead of rapping. And it was the same thing where you just had to time, you know, where you'd hit the triangle or the X or the circle and all these different buttons and allowed you to just jam on your guitar. It was a humongous amount of fun. And that was the first time I'd ever played a game with music where I was able to control it like that. And that just completely blew my mind. And next up is something that took that to the next level, which you mentioned already, Brian, Guitar Hero. When that came out, it was just like, oh, my God, I've never experienced anything like that, with where you could actually be holding the guitar and having to time it all and just shred the solos and have face-offs with your friends. Much fun.
And it got you back, or it reminded you of some of like the songs you might have forgotten.
It was just it, and it was really, you had, it was like a whole new skill that you had to develop for video games.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, you know, playing a game like Jammer Lammy, you're still just playing your little controller.
Yeah.
But that doesn't translate to playing Guitar Hero. You actually had to get good at doing that.
Yeah.
Kind of a waste in the big term, I guess, in the big scope. But it was a huge amount of fun and just incredibly addictive.
Yeah, I loved it.
Up next, I'm going to say GoldenEye for N64. Because that was the first time that I had ever been able to shoot my friends in video games.
Well, not only that, but you could literally go over to a friend's house and, like, if there's two other friends there, you could do a 4 split screen and for hours just... And you're like,
yes,
you're screen watching.
That was the first time
so fun
that I had experienced that type of multiplayer fun, and specifically being able to like actually, you know, turn on paintball mode or the golden gun mode and just shoot your friends. It was
an incredible
amount of fun. And it created such a level of competition amongst these little kids.
Yeah, it was so great.
It was incredible. And I'd never done anything like that. Okay, so up next, World of Warcraft. I know that it was not the first MMO, but it was the first one that I had ever gotten into. So for me, it was a totally new experience. I had tried EverQuest, which I think was actually one of the first MMOs to be out there, but I didn't like it. It didn't click for my brain for some reason. But when World of Warcraft came out, I tried that, and that clicked for me. That worked. It was
you
so
and
smooth.
Bolarama.
Oh, it was just completely unlike anything that I had done up to that point. And I was obsessed for months. Mario 64. Super Mario Brothers, or Super Mario 64, was the first 3D platformer that I and many other people had been exposed to. So when you're taking Mario and you're no longer just going side-scrolling, yeah. you're actually able to look around and jump up and down, and you can control it, climb up the trees and all this stuff. That was unlike anything that I had done up to that point.
Yeah, jumping over those bridges sometimes were like, oh, shit, I jumped the wrong
way. It was hard. Or, you know, like, but even going down the slides, that was like, I remember doing that like, oh, my God, I've never done anything like this. It blew my little 11-year-old mind completely. And last up, of course, I'm going to say Wolfenstein 3D, because that was the first shooter that I, the first first-person shooter that I had ever played.
I still have Wolfenstein on my Xbox. So good.
Yeah, I mean, I remember my grandpa, and he was a computer guy big time, and he brought over a floppy disk with Wolfenstein on it, and was like, here, check this out. And I was just completely blown away by it. It was just amazing, and I couldn't stop playing it on my old, you know, DOS computer.
I really want to go back and play all these fucking old games now.
And, well, you know, and I'm also going to say, we've already been talking about it, but Sea of Thieves absolutely fits on that list.
As you can tell, Atterbury hates Sea of Thieves. We all like it, though. Well, that was good. That was a good topic. You want to go on to the last one?
Let's do it.
All right. Kind of a fun one. We'll see, because I think this will be fun because we might be able to disagree on what classifies here to one another. But a question was posed. What are the best serious quality action movies, not dumb popcorn action flicks? You know, because like when you go to an action movie, you're like, okay, Transformers, dumb popcorn action film. You know, I go to see the action, or Bad Boys 2 or whatever. You know, it's like.
Or Expendables, that kind of thing.
Yeah, something like that. But like.
I do like that you just listed two Michael Bay movies, though.
Yeah.
That was your example of a dumb action movie.
Oh, yes, of course.
Michael Bay and Michael Bay.
So I'm curious, like, what are, like, some really good serious movies or serious action movies that, like, we should tell people about that they might not know about? Or, like, man, we might agree, we disagree on, like, what consider or to be considered a dumb action movie or not. We don't know. So do you want me to go first?
Yeah, do it.
All right.
Go for it.
So serious action movies. I have a list. I put Children of Men, which was the amazing Clive Owen movie. That was I consider that action, of course. Saving Private Ryan, I also consider an action movie, and that's definitely not, you know, Bad Boys 2-esque.
Very true.
I figured that one was going to be on Brian's list.
Also, I'm going to say RoboCop. Some might disagree with that, but I think RoboCop is actually a pretty serious action film. Even though
what are you talking about?
You know, you think that's a dumb popcorn action film?
Yes. I'm not saying it's not good, but it's not a deep, like, a serious movie.
I think, like, culturally and, like, a lot of satire on, like,
stuff. It was a glorified B movie.
Okay. Well, that was the one I had trouble with putting on, but I still put it on. I'm going to say First Blood, the first Rambo movie, even though Rambo 2 and 3 and 4 and whatever else were all pretty terrible. But First Blood actually was pretty serious and badass.
That's fair. I would say that the first Rambo, much like the first Rocky movie.
Yes, I agree.
Those are both great serious action movies.
Agreed. Another one is The Matrix. Only the first one, though. First one, I think, was pretty damn good and serious. And then it just fell off the wagon after that.
Matrix for me is like right on the borderline. That's a tough call.
So there's that. Apocalypse Now. I put that one on there. Also, Ben Affleck.
As an action movie?
I think.
Well, there's not much action in that. What kind of action do you see, really?
People killing each other, helicopters throwing napalm everywhere.
You don't see that. They show that way off in the distance. It's really just dramatic. You see the guy saying that he loves the smell of napalm.
So more of a dramatic. Okay, I get it. I'm going to say also Ben Affleck's The Town, the bank robbing action movie.
That one's actually on my list.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought that was surprisingly.
That's a good one.
It's a great one. I'm also going to say Heat. I'm also going to say Inception, which I think was a damn good action movie, serious one.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a good one to have on the list.
I'm
was going on my list also.
I'm going to say the Leon the Professional, a young Natalie Portman, Jean Reno.
I love that movie.
And my last one, actually two last ones, a movie called 71, which is a war movie, action movie, but very serious, takes place over the course of a night. In an Irish town, it's hardcore, really good. And also Battle Royale, hardcore, serious action movie. Very good. I like those movies. So you two. So I swear to God, if y'all fucking say like Total Recall or something like that.
True Lies. True Lies are True Lies.
Is yours really True Lies?
No.
Oh, okay.
John's is Die Hard.
Die Hard all the way through.
All right, Jonathan, your serious action movies.
All right. First up, No Country for Old Men.
Ooh. Antoine Chigurh. Oh, no, wait. That is.
That is a serious action movie with some damn fine action in it.
Yes, it is.
Next up, I'm going to say Gangs of New York.
Oh, hell yes. Bill the Butcher.
Fucking violent.
All the way.
Such good action. So serious. Not a lighthearted movie at all. next up, Braveheart. Huh. Another action movie,
true.
Serious movie, a lot, just a damn, it walks the line between being action and drama, you know?
Yeah.
Up next, one of my favorite movies of all time, Gladiator.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's a great movie. It is a fantastic, and anyone who says that is just being an asshole, that it's not, is just being an asshole. Because it is a great movie.
Just like they did in the movie. Bam. Bam.
God.
Just kidding.
My point exactly.
even L.A. Confidential was really good, too.
Oh, yeah.
Up next, 300. Now, I hesitated to put 300 on there because it's almost a popcorn movie, but
like
it's
the
not.
Most popcorn action
it's,
movie.
That's pretty popcorn.
You guys think so? I don't know. It doesn't feel like True Lies or something to me.
Yes, what are you talking about? The
I don't
whole
know.
Movie is.
It's. I think that if the movie is emotional like that one is, then it's maybe not a popcorn movie.
Did you fucking cry at 300? Are you serious?
No, but I don't cry at it. It's not a walk to remember, but it does make me feel things. You know, it's touching.
Good it's, God.
All those buff shiny men make him feel things.
I thought it. Jeremy said it. Oh, it's so good.
Come on. At the end of the movie where Leonidas is screaming and just being completely destroyed by arrows, if that doesn't make you feel like wow, that's so cool,
an
then
oiled
you're
guy yelling for lots of dicks and then lots of dicks impale him.
I feel
him.
Like the digital like kind of gore of that movie is what might move it into the popcorn.
I know, but some could say that that's just an artistic stylization. But I do agree that it is, to me, I almost didn't put it on the list because I couldn't quite decide, but I'm saying it.
Ugh, I'm sorry.
And in a similar vein, I'm putting Watchmen on the list.
Ooh, I loved Watchmen. Hell yeah.
That's a great one.
See, and if Watchmen fits, they're so similar. I mean, you know, as far as the style of the film.
Like, well, it's the same director.
Well, one is superheroes and one is Spartan guys.
No, it is not. Oh, I just learned a lot about Atterbury today.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Up next.
He's very passionate today, isn't he? He's very fiery.
He is, like the 300 Spartans. He just needs to oil himself up. Oh.
I am oiled up. What are you talking about?
Oh, that was so funny.
All right, up next, Casino Royale. It's hard to put a Bond film not in, like, the stupid popcorn films area, but to me, Casino Royale didn't fit that vibe at all. That was much more of a serious action movie.
That and Skyfall, I thought both.
See, I don't know. Skyfall, I loved, but to me, that was really starting to kind of go back to the popcorny James Bond vibe.
Right.
Skyfall, to me, transitioned. It started more serious, and then by the time it got to the end, it was popcorny.
Yeah, exactly. So that one, like, I love Skyfall. I think it's a huge amount of fun, but Casino Royale is a much more serious feeling film, in my opinion. I love this next movie so much, A History of Violence.
Oh, yes. How did I forget that?
That movie is so much fun, so violent, and very serious. It's not lighthearted in the slightest bit, but damn is it good. Jeremy, you've seen that movie, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's okay.
A great movie.
I think we watched it together a long time ago.
I think you're right. And last on my list, I'm going to say Enemy at the Gates. A movie that really doesn't get enough love anymore. But I think it's a great World War II movie and a great action film.
All right.
Do you remember that one, Brian? You looked like you couldn't think about what I was talking about.
No, I was trying to is that the Will Smith movie? No, it's not the Will Smith movie.
No. That's the one with Jude Law and Ed Harris as snipers.
Oh,
one
yeah.
Jude Law is Vasily Zaitsev, the sniper. And the other one is Ed Harris plays the Nazi sniper.
Okay. All right.
I love that movie. It's a lot of fun.
It's good. It's good. 300.
That's fair. I understand the criticism for that.
It's like
one.
RoboCop.
Like I said.
RoboCop and 300. We're not sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're not sure, but I guess you feel as though RoboCop is a really serious, dramatic film in addition to being an action movie, which is legit. As legit as me feeling 300 is.
No fucking way.
Jeremy, you can rule on this. Which one of those two do you think more belongs in this genre?
Okay, here's the problem with this. This is currently where you guys are... What I frequently run into with Mrs. Jeremy Megger, what I like to refer to as an age gap. So Brian was a kid when RoboCop came out, which is the difference of John seeing it when he was older. And so the impression that RoboCop made on you when you were young, for a lot of kids, it was probably one of their first like rated R action movies that they got to see. And so because of that, it comes across as the nostalgic factor is a little bit different.
All right.
Well, yeah, and it probably was very shocking to you as a kid to watch
yeah.
that, too.
Like, it was fucking hardcore. You know,
yeah.
like, that was probably, from what I can remember, even for me, was probably one of the first, like, of, like, the gorier, you know, like, kind of 80s action movies that I think I got to see.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. But I was like 20 when 300 came out.
And them blowing away Murphy, you know, at the beginning of that movie is a pretty fucking serious thing.
Yeah, that's a pretty scary scene, especially for a kid.
There's no serious moment in 300.
What are you talking about? I just watched that movie like 4 days ago. It's fresh in my mind.
I'm so happy you did.
Wait, you don't like that movie? Brian, do you not like 300? Because that would explain all of your feelings about it.
No, it's not like I don't like 300.
Don't think it's good, or what? Like, because you sound like it's not that I don't like it, but you know,
no,
I
enjoy 300. I enjoy 300 sequel as well. I don't know. I'm just glad you
see.
Like
I thought the sequel was definitely a popcorn flick.
See, I agree with that.
One,
oh, wait, for
the
sure.
first one is to me, it's right on the line. Like The Matrix.
I thought Matrix 1 was pretty serious. The second and third one's definitely not, but I thought the first one was.
That's like saying, well, I don't know.
Oh, well.
I don't know.
Jeremy, shed some light and give us the serious action movies.
All right, here we go. So the thing I ran into was a lot of when it came to serious action movies, there were movies that I felt were serious, but... you know, finding ones that I felt like had enough action in them, like, you know, it's like, you know, and I actually texted John, I was like, hey, give me an example of one of these movies, because, you know, it's like, if you look at like The Godfather, it's like, you know, those are serious movies, you know, and there's action and killing, but do you consider like The Godfather, you know, can you put The Godfather in something like this?
I ran into that too, and I was like, I try to stay away from gangster films, because I think gangster is different than action. Even though they have, like, you know, guns and killing. But I that's why I didn't put Godfather or Goodfellas or Casino in there, you know, really.
Yeah, like, see, none of those movies I would consider action films.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I thought the same thing, Jeremy. I thought the same
thing. Yeah, because the only one of those I was going to put on there was I was going to put Road to Perdition on my list.
Damn good
As
film,
an action
too.
Movie. Yeah, interesting.
Now, I also did have The Heat and I had The Town on there. One movie I can't believe John didn't fucking list is Tombstone.
It's a Western though. That's what stopped me from doing any Western movies. It's like, but those are Westerns, which is like the gangster genre. It's like, it almost isn't like an action movie. I don't know. I thought about Western.
Because, like, to me, I felt like Tombstone fit perfectly in the category because it's pretty fucking serious, and there is an assload of killing and violence in that movie, and it's all legit killing and violence.
And I do absolutely love that movie. I never get tired of watching Tombstone.
Well, good.
So for one movie that I feel like the first one is not a popcorn flick, but the second one is, for me, is John Wick.
So I thought about John Wick, and both I love dearly. I just think that they're, and even though they're great, that's some serious shit in the first like 20 minutes of John Wick. I struggle with that, and I didn't put it on there, but I'm glad somebody did.
I thought about it too. I love John Wick 1 and 2 so much, but I think to me there just isn't enough drama, or there isn't enough like actual storyline to make it fit this for me some reason. It just didn't quite get there.
This one isn't really as much a movie as it is a Netflix series, but I would put the Netflix Daredevil series in this category of serious action for me.
I like that. I like that.
And the last one, which for me, this one is borderline popcorn. It's you know, not really super popcorny because, I mean, it came out like on fucking Valentine's Day, but it was the Carl Urban Dread movie.
Okay. So I always thought that was a popcorn action movie, even though I really liked that movie. I always thought that I was like, okay, that's, you know, it's definitely better than any Michael Bay movie could ever be, but I wouldn't compare it to like Heat or Inception or something like that.
Yeah, I think that, I agree. That one is on the borderline, probably every bit as much as 300. But to me, it's a little bit over the scale to popcorn.
Oh, 300. Okay, so three movies that I want to bring up that none of us brought up. Serious action movies. Aliens, Terminator, and Terminator 2.
Well, okay, but here's my thing, though.
Oh, come on.
It's...
Terminator and Terminator 2?
If you're not going to have gangster movies or westerns in there, then
sci-fi.
I feel like because those are like almost like little subgenres in and of themselves.
Well, like Aliens also is it's definitely its own thing.
Action, because I would say sci-fi horror is the first
pretty
one,
but I wouldn't say is it a serious movie though? I think it's a little bit too tongue in cheek to be serious.
Yeah, you might be right with that. Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think that any movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger is not a serious action movie.
I would say the first Terminator is pretty serious, but it's the sci-fi aspect. And even Terminator 2 is really good, but it's tongue in cheek as well. But I did say the first
I'm not saying it's not good, but I'm saying I wouldn't say it's serious.
Yeah.
I'll be back. I mean, come on, really? that's on the same level as fucking No Country for Old Men.
I agree. Okay, I agree with that. Okay. So, John hates everything except for 300. Oh my God. That's the title of this episode.
And
we want to know why. So funny.
300 is a great movie. I don't understand. Jeremy's not even backing me up. He's just letting me sing. And I know he loves that movie. He's just completely letting me drown out
here. I'm dying here. We have gone over 90 minutes.
I mean, the show's got to be entertaining. I mean, come on.
Oh, my goodness. It's so good.
And yes, I do love that movie.
Good, good, good. All right. Well, that's our show today. We have gone over 90 minutes just for you guys. We love you all. We are Mediocrity on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Find us, subscribe, love, because we love you. We'll be back next week.